Hey guys, do you like video games? Do you like heavy metal? Comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Time to rock out with your geek out. Metal Geeks! Welcome, Geekazoids. Here are your hosts, Carrie G and John Michael. Geek it out, fellas!
This is Paul from November's Doom, and you're listening to Metal Geeks. Keep it metal.
Welcome, everyone, to a brand new episode of the Metal Geeks podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Carrie G. Along with me is the ever-loving Spectacular.
Gosh, I got a really nice intro there, or unless you're talking about him.
No, I'm talking about... Actually, I'm not talking about you at all.
Oh, okay.
But well, I'm talking about our special guest, lead vocalist of November's Doom, Mr. Paul Kerr. Thank you for being on the show.
Oh, guys, thanks for having me, and hello to both of you.
And thank you, John Michael, for being on the show.
Oh, thanks, man.
I don't want to leave you out, dude.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
This was a last-minute show, man, because it was a very spiderific weekend for, I guess, all of us guys. I saw the movie, John Michael has seen the movie, and Paul has seen the movie twice.
You got that right. I bought my tickets over a week ago for both showings, so yeah, I was pretty stoked to see this.
And we're trying to figure out how we're going to make this as least spoilerific as we can, but it might be a little bit difficult.
Yeah, what we should probably do is do our regular kind of talk, and then at one point we'll say, look, you know, if you haven't seen the movie, stop here, go watch the fucking movie, and then come back and listen.
If you guys hear, speaking of nerdy, geeky stuff, if you hear Rainbow Six in the background, my girlfriend is playing Rainbow Six with her brother, so you'll hear some shouting and yelling. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's better than that, man.
It's a whole house of nerds, so it's great.
And my wife's in the living room right now watching Doctor Who.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So not nerdy at all.
Nope.
Oh, and may the fourth be with you.
Exactly. May the fourth be with you too. I had for people that don't know, I am the social media coordinator for Comic Palooza, and if you don't know what that is, Paul, it's a think San Diego Comic Con, but at a different level. We're trying to be at that level, but I mean, like this year we have five members from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., including Coulson is going to be there.
Oh, very cool.
We have four doctors from Doctor Who. We have, I think, 5, 6, 7, and 8. We have John Barrowman. We have like five different Power Rangers and hundreds of guests. We have Jim Steranko that's going to be there.
I've got a Power Ranger story for you.
Do you?
Oh,
let's hear it.
I've taken martial arts a good 12, 13 years of my life. Previous life. And one of my main instructors was moved out to California to be a stuntman. He started out as one of the putties under the makeup.
Nice.
And or under the costume, and then he advanced to, I think he was the Green Ranger and then the Black Ranger. So when you see those guys actually fighting, it's stunt people, it's not the actors. So
oh, whoa, don't ruin that now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I?
That's, what's his name? Tommy. Not Tommy. That's the name of the character, but he's, I know who you're talking about. He just started fighting MMA as well, too.
Yeah, they're all buddies out there in California.
Are you talking about? I know one of the guys, his name was Jason David Frank, and he's local here. Yeah, he has a studio down here, actually, not far from me.
Wow.
Nice.
Very cool. But today we went to this art event, which is actually really cool. It was a May the 4th Star Wars art event benefiting a local art place called, I think it was the Warhouse, Warhous. First off, it was hot as balls in there. It was like 600-700 people crammed into a studio. Wow. Like a warehouse and no AC. It was just hot. But and there was so much cool Star Wars artwork that these people are doing. It's pretty amazing.
That's awesome.
So I'm waiting on some of my photographers to actually give me some really cool shots from that show and definitely start sharing that stuff because there was so much cool stuff. And it was, I hate to say it, it was very hipster-like feeling in there. Because I think Star Wars is really permeated into hipsterville as well.
Oh, yeah.
Hippieville.
I can see that, man.
I mean, there was way too many tight pants going on in that club.
What a shame.
Indeed. So, before we move into any spiderific categories and topics, let's talk about what's going on with you, Paul. I'm excited to have you on the show. Not to fanboy out, but I fanboy out on your voice, your vocals, and your writing, man.
Did he masturbates to it?
I wouldn't go that far, but no. Close. Pretty close.
I do all the time, so it's all...
That's how you get the words to come out on the page.
That's right. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Especially the Witherscape album that came out last year, man.
Oh yeah,
one of my top three albums of the year, and I got the interview right before the album came out. I did an interview, and he could not say enough kind words about you.
Oh, Dan is he's a great guy. We collaborated very well on that. Very difficult. It was truly the most challenging thing I've ever written because I got the outline from Dan and Ragnar, the two guys who put it all together, and I got the outline of the story and what they wanted and what song, and then I got demos for this stuff like 6 months before. I had about 6 months to write it, and all the demos were, it was Dan doing vocals of pure nonsense words. Just things that totally didn't make any sense at all, but he had a very specific phrasing and a very specific... when I wrote the lyrics, I had to write the lyrics to match his syllables exactly to the demos. So
that's interesting.
It was challenging. It was really challenging to get all the information of the story into the album and match exactly his phrasing that he wanted. But, God, I'm so proud of the end result. And... I don't know if he wants me to say anything to anybody, but I've already sent him lyrics for there is a follow-up coming, a short follow-up, and then we are just about beginning to write the second full-length. So this is a continuing project. This isn't just a one-time thing.
Wow.
That's okay. Nobody will hear this. Don't worry about it.
He didn't tell me not to tell anybody this time. I know the first Witherscape was a huge secret, and it was killing me that I couldn't talk about it for that long. Mm. But I was excited just to hear Dan growl again. Even the demos with nonsense words, I listened to that stuff so much.
I played the album for one of my writers. His name is RD. The other day, and he. I took this as a great compliment for the music. He said if the growls weren't there, this would blow up on radio.
Yeah, it's,
and he likes that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the growls aren't for everybody. I mean, we get the same thing with November's Doom. We have a lot of fans that only like the cleaner style vocal. We have some fans that wish we would do all growls. You know, that's the thing with music. It's objective. Everyone has their opinion. You cannot please everybody, and you shouldn't try. I mean... that's what November – we try to please the five guys in the room that write the record, and if we're happy at the end of the day, anybody else that likes our music, it's just a bonus.
So let's talk about the new album, which is called Blood White. Any release date yet?
The release date is July 15th. It is available for pre-order right now through thenrecords.com. I think Omega Order is what they have, and you can get you can pre-order – just the CD, there's a t-shirt bundle, there's a bundle with a patch, and it's also coming out in a double gatefold vinyl.
Vinyl, wow, that's making a huge comeback.
Yeah, yeah, hipsters, yay!
There are some metal hipsters out there, I know.
No, that's true. Hey, you know what, I grew up in the vinyl era. I mean, that was my thing when I was a kid, and, you know, so I welcome it. Ophotic was the first thing that came out on vinyl, because my bass player and I, Mike Feldman, we started a vinyl label pretty much just to release our own stuff. And we put a photic out, and the end decided that they wanted to do Blood White on vinyl. So we said, go ahead. It will save us a lot of money.
Exactly. So we've talked to Larry about, you know, some of the writing process of this album. What were some of the memorable moments in the studio?
Wow. Studio time is always really it's quite work. From beginning to end. I mean, I know the videos go up and there's a lot of, you know, screwing around and we show you all the highlights and the good stuff, but they are long, grueling days of playing and listening to that same music over and over and over and over and over. So you really start to scrutinate and really mm-hmm. have to rely on your producer, our producer Chris in the studio to, you know, we might just be so tired of hearing something that we have to rely on someone else to tell us what sounds good and what doesn't at that point. So, yeah, I mean, just memorable. I mean, the whole thing is memorable. We just work so hard and you lose track of night and day and what day of the week it is. And if it's dark outside and when was the last time you ate, it's work for weeks straight and until we're happy. So, you know, that's why you cut loose as often as you can, and we make those goofy videos and some drinking's involved. And
yeah, if you haven't, if you want to know what it's like to record an album like that, go to the November's Doom YouTube page, and you did like 5 or 6 different videos from this album.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, Larry, just downtime, he grabbed the camera, he filmed a bunch of stuff, he threw those together, and they came out really good. So yeah, we're proud of this one. It's definitely different.
I have a question about the artwork. Who did the artwork for the album?
I went back to Travis Smith. I've used him on The Knowing, To Welcome the Fade, Novella Reservoir. I like to go different artists, different albums, just to get a little bit different of a look. But this time I went back with Travis, and we worked closely together to come up with the idea and the concept. And yeah, that's I love what he did.
How do you guys come up with that concept? Do you play the album for him and then he gets to?
No, actually, he hasn't heard any of the music or actually saw any of the lyrics. It's mostly where I just go to him with all the ideas in my head and I kind of tell him, this is the name of the album, this is kind of what I'm thinking. He takes that and runs with it, and he starts sending me variations and different ideas. And generally, I get back something from him that I didn't expect, and
right,
it ends up being the cover. So, yeah, I really like working with him a lot.
Very cool.
Yeah, he's definitely one of my favorite, you know, metal artists. And I love everything that he does, and his style is so recognizable.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's a Travis Smith album when you look at it.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, did he also design the T-shirt? Logo for the design for the T-shirt and the bundle that's on the megaorder.com?
Yeah, the image that's on the T-shirt is one of the images that he created for the inside booklet.
Oh, okay.
So it's a 24-page booklet. Every song has its own 2-panel illustration. He did most of those in the booklet. I think I did 2 or 3 of them myself to fill it out.
Right.
But yeah, so everything is different. Every page. These days when it's so easy to download and basically steal music, you have to give people something more. And if you buy the CD, you're rewarded with 24 pages of artwork.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I love most about buying CDs are the booklets. In fact, it's part of the process of when we're reviewing CDs. I always make sure that we keep them, the artwork as part of the critique.
I love the end records for that, because no matter what I've ever submitted to them, even when I submit something like a 20-page full-color booklet and I'm like, oh man, there's no way they're going to let me do this because it's just the cost of manufacturing, they're all over it and they've never balked at it. And, you know, I'm thankful to be with a label that lets us have complete freedom without, you know, we don't abuse it either. I mean, I wouldn't go to them and say, all right, we want this in 14-karat gold staples. And, you know, you know, we don't do that either. I keep it. And this time I got away with 24 pages because, like the cover, the entire booklet is in black and white.
Oh, beautiful.
So I was able to keep costs down in that way. But, it's that's why the vinyl, it's a double gatefold vinyl. Every vinyl will be unique. It's going to be double poured, black and white, like this ink spread vinyl on each. It's going to look really sweet. The whole package together is going to be nice.
And you mentioned the album was a little bit different. What do you mean by that?
The couple of songs that people have heard from us, we've played 2 songs live at a couple recent shows. And you can find those on YouTube. Blood White and a song called Heartfelt. And they're probably the heaviest songs on the record. We have a couple other ones that are heavy. But for the most part, it's an hour and 10 minutes long. It comes in at 11 tracks. It's one of the longest records we've ever put out. And we really wanted to focus this time on melody and harmony and vocal melody and really coming up with a lot of vocal hook in the singing. So there is about 85% clean singing compared to the growling on this record.
Wow.
And
we both
wow.
We jinxed each other there.
Yeah. You know, there's nothing on there that's really a ballad like the slow ballady stuff like we've done. There are mellow tracks done in a different way. There are clean singing over heavier parts, and it's just it's more of a melodic record, I think, than we've done in the past. I like to think of it in it's an extension from a photic. It to me and to the band, it's the logical step forward. I mean, if there's one thing you can say about November's Doom, and you compare any of our records, this is our 9th coming out now. You can compare any of the 9 records. No 2 sound alike, yet they all sound like us. So it's kind of an extension of that. It's yet one more step in a new direction, but still remains the sound like November's Doom, because we do bring in elements of the past material, but we try to like branch out in new ways kind of to see what we can get away with.
Now, so definitely an inevitable progression for the band then.
Yes. Oh, it's definitely a progression for the band. This is another one of those records. We question ourselves every time we're in the studio. We always say, I don't know what people are going to think of this. And then when it's all done and it's mixed and we listen to the final product, it all makes sense. I mean, we don't even know until it's completely done, and then we kind of get it.
Now, you're going to say something, John Michael?
Oh, I was just going to ask if there are any guests on the album.
You know, yes, Dan Swano sings. He does some clean backup on one song for me. I had another guest spot on the record that didn't make it, and it would have been the most unique and different guest spot for a metal record. I don't even know if you guys are even going to know who this is, but I had befriended a singer-songwriter named Greg Laswell, and he is married to Ingrid Michaelson.
I've heard the name. Yes, I have.
And he's if November's Doom were to be singer-songwriters, the music would sound just like this. He really creates his progressions and the chord choices and the things he does. It's really a dark melodic kind of coffee shop guitarist kind of like singer songwriter, and he's had his stuff, and I just heard one of his songs on the TV show Arrow last week.
So cool.
The opening scene when what's his name, Oliver's in bed with I'm drawing blanks on names. Anyway, the first scene of the show is one of his songs. But I went to see him. I found out he's a closet metalhead. He was a fan of November's Doom. We collaborated. He had sent me an MP3 of a backing vocal he did for the song Heartfelt. And he backed me up with like falsetto and this amazing vocal line. Then he had some personal family stuff going on. He couldn't get back to the studio to send me the finals. I had to turn in the album for a deadline. So I ended up going in the studio and I re-sang the stuff he sent me. First time I ever did like falsetto kind of stuff, and I didn't even know I can pull it off, but I recreated exactly what he did because it was so good and it just became such a part of the song. So yeah, his guest vocal is there in spirit. Eventually we'll do something together, but
I was gonna say hopefully that that'll end up becoming some sort of a maybe a bonus track or something that you guys can work out later on.
Maybe that would be great. That or something else. Yeah, I mean, it was a really unique kind of idea to have someone like that guest on this. And I think his fans probably would have been pissed. But, you know, because I
That's
mean,
good, though.
I gave him carte blanche. I said, here is the album and you pick what you want to sing on. And he picked like one of the meanest and heaviest songs. And I was really surprised by that, but it was great. So yeah, unfortunately, when you hear the song Heartfelt and you hear the high falsetto stuff in the background, that was supposed to be Greg Laswell, but you know, didn't quite make it this time.
So before we move on to some geeky speak, what's coming up next for the band? I mean, the album coming out in July. Do you what kind of touring do you guys want to do? And what's up with the rest of the year?
We have a Doom show. We're playing in Las Vegas in early June, and unfortunately, the date eludes me at the time. Then we jump on a jet plane and we head on over the pond and we go to Belgium and we're playing Grass Pop. It's a huge festival over there. Black Sabbath, Slayer, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains. It's a huge, huge festival. This is our second time playing it. We have that, possibly a couple other shows, and then we're planning on doing some record release shows here in the States. Probably around July, we'll do Chicago, we'll head east, we'll do something in New York, and, you know, we're just taking it as it comes.
No place down here in Texas you can play.
We would love to get back. We've only played Texas. We've played at South by Southwest.
That's right. That was like 3 or 4 years ago?
Jesus, probably longer than that. But yeah, it's been a while. But
I tried to get tickets for that show and I could not get in.
Really?
Yeah. And the only time I've ever really seen you guys, I think I was telling Larry this, was maybe 2000, 2001. It was at a Milwaukee Metal Fest.
Oh my God, you need to see us now.
Yeah.
We are so much better and so different than we were back then. I'm sorry you saw that band. But, we don't tour much. I mean, we have families and jobs and older guys now. And, you know, it gets a lot more difficult as we get older to make this kind of stuff happen. And it's, you know, November's Doom is not our full-time job. We don't make a living on it. We don't make money on it. The only benefit for the band is we get to travel. And we get to see amazing places and, you know, we get to go play festivals in front of, you know, 15,000 people. And it's, you know, that's the reward. That's the payoff. That's the benefit. That's why we do this. We do it because we love the music. And, you know, there's no money involved. That's our money. It's the joy of being able to go play in front of people that we wouldn't get the opportunity to any other time.
I think that's kind of like what a lot of bands in America are misguided on. They believe that they can live full time doing their band, but it's just not like it used to be.
No, not at all. I mean, you have no one makes money on record sales anymore because record sales are dying. I mean, yeah. 2 years ago, we would sell 4 physical CDs to every 1 download. Now we sell 5 downloads to every 1 physical CD.
Wow.
It has completely turned in 2 years. The CD is dying. That will be a dead medium within 5 years. So,
I hate to hear that.
You know, so now bands, because you don't have the sales, because most people steal the music, so they don't have the sales, so a lot of bands say, you know what, we're going to go out, we're going to tour, we're going to make our money touring. Well,
right.
That's great, but now you have every band in existence all wanting to tour at the same time, so your average fan has a choice of 15 to 20 shows a month that they can spend their money on.
Yeah,
no one has the money to go see all of these shows, so you're not making the money or drawing and touring like you used to. It is an ugly, ugly, ugly business that, unfortunately, when the record companies had the time and the chance where they could have jumped on board and thought outside the box and actually made the digital work for them, they refused, and they wanted to stick to the old way of selling records. It doesn't work, and it has, like, crippled the industry in every way. It's awful. Same thing is happening to movies, TV, magazines, comic books, everybody suffering in the digital age.
That's unfortunate. I know a couple of bands that are out there now touring. I've been acquaintances with Ken Sorcerer from Abigail Williams and Lord Mantis for many years now. And, you know, he gets a job for a while, and then he has to stop and go tour. And he goes back and gets a job. Goes to tour again, you know, so
it's a rough life, you know, but if you're a young guy and you have the means to do it, absolutely. I'm 42 years old. I have an 11-year-old daughter. You know, I have a life and that counts on me. So I can't do that. Unfortunately, that part of my life is long gone. I'll never be able to live that. But, you know, I wouldn't trade anything that I have for the world.
I remember a time right before their first full length was released. I introduced him to a friend in New York, and he had nowhere to go. Like, he was literally homeless after the tour was over.
Yeah, it's rough.
And I had them meet up, and he actually lived in their closet for fucking two to three months. Yeah.
Well, that's dedication. That's someone who loves what they do, and right. I admire that so much. If I was younger with no responsibilities, I would. If I can go back, and knowing what I know now and redo this, things would be very different. But I honestly have no complaints. I love what we do. I am. Geez, I hate to say the word blessed. I am very lucky. I am very lucky that we have fans that allow me to continue to do this. I'm just doing this because I love it, and the payoff is there are enough people out there that like what I do that I get to go to Belgium and play grass pop with you know, amazing bands, and that I get to go on tour, and people show up every night. I'm very lucky for that, and I attribute that not to my luck, but you know, I'm the most untalented guy in this band. I've said that from the beginning. I'm the guy with the least amount of talent. I have just surrounded myself with great musicians, and they've helped me get to places I've always wanted to go. So,
now you mentioned the thing about the CDs dying, and I wanted to touch. I've been talking to some people about this. Is, you know, there's new services and that people don't really steal from per se, but you know, like Spotify and things like that, which I'll admit that I use when I'm at work or I'm in someplace else. What's your opinion on those kind of programs like that?
My opinion on those, I think it's worse than stealing music, because they pay very little. They pay pennies,
right.
pennies to the artist when the song plays, and then your label takes 90% of that, and you still get your same royalty rate on profit that you do. So when you get paid from that, you get nothing. Those services screw the bands more so than downloading. At least downloading, if they like your album, they're going to go out and they'll probably support you with a t-shirt or something like that. But I mean, and believe me, I'm not knocking it. I love Spotify. I love the idea of streaming. It's like the new age of radio. There needs to be a shakeup in the industry where these people are forced to pay for the content. I cannot start my own TV station and take people's TV shows that they put money in and air them on my station for free for people and only pay a couple pennies here or there. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
You know, but somehow the music industry does.
Here's like big bands only getting like a check for like 15 cents.
Exactly.
I don't know if everybody
makes money off of a band except for the band.
I don't know if either of you have heard of the band Byzantine, but I'm friends with their vocalist, guitarist, Chris Ojeda, and he posted this status, and it was very, very interesting, and I've actually contacted him. He doesn't have Skype or anything like that, so I have to talk to him and get him on the show. But he actually posted this. I'm going to read it. Hopefully I read it correctly. For those of you interested, Spotify pays Byzantine 0.0047 per song stream.
Ridiculous.
Our last report from Spotify US was $19.58 for 4,160 streams.
Isn't that lovely? You can't even buy a fucking dinner. Oh, can I swear on this?
Absolutely.
Oh. Okay.
Fuck yeah, you can.
You can't even buy a fucking dinner for yourself and your woman with that. That's pathetic. Right. It's a slap in the face, and it's disgusting.
So it kind of makes me want to cancel my Spotify account now.
You know, bands don't need record labels like they used to. I mean, you pay for what? Manufacturing? Manufacturing of what? A CD that no one's going to buy anymore? What do you pay for? You pay for distribution. Distribution of what? The CDs that no one buys anymore? No places sell CDs anymore.
Right.
All you need your label for is your advance for your recording budget.
I think I mentioned this completely different genre, but my wife likes Macklemore, and they actually just made millions off of saying fuck you to the big record labels by doing it all themselves.
Now, I'm in another band, These Are They, and we just released a 3-song EP on our own, digital only, and I made more money off of that one EP than the band did selling records on the label for 3 years.
We just played a song. I purchased that off of iTunes, and we played a song on the last episode of MSRcast.
Awesome, I appreciate that. We have a full length that's done and written and recorded and turned into the label, but they've pushed it back and back and back, so I have no idea when it's coming out. Hopefully by the end of this year.
Awesome.
Wow.
So let's stop talking about...
Yeah, I sound jaded, the music
don't I? I sound angry and jaded.
No.
It's all good.
Let's stop talking about the boring music industry bullshit, and we'll talk about good stuff like Amazing Spider-Man.
Hell yes, stuff that matters.
Exactly.
Well,
so movie or comic first?
Comics first, because I still want to make that point where we have the people... This is just a heads up, guys. At some point in the show, we're going to tell you to stop playing the show, because we're going to spoil the fuck out of everything. So at this point, if you haven't read any of these comics, stop now, go read the comics, and then come back and listen.
Stop now or forever hold your peace and don't bitch at us.
Yeah. Okay. So first off, how far did you end up getting, Kerry?
I finished the entire, the last five or six issues of Superior Spider-Man.
Okay.
And I read Amazing Spider-Man number one.
Okay. Did you read all the stories in there, or did you just...
I did. I read everything.
Okay. I still have not read all of the stories in there because I got sucked in the free comic book day. But I am caught up to the first two stories of The Amazing Spider-Man.
The important stuff, really.
Yeah, pretty much. But and how about you, Paul? Did you read them like five times?
No, not quite that many. I've read all of the Superiors. I've read Amazing Spider-Man number one. I read that today. So I'm caught up to talk to you guys.
Okay, cool. All right, so what was your take on the end of Superior Spider-Man 1 to the beginning of The Amazing Spider-Man 1?
Well, bullshit.
Well, yeah. when Slott took over and he announced, and I was furious with the change when Superior first came out. I fucking hated the idea. I was pissed. And I ended up loving it.
I think that was the majority of everyone, too.
Man, was that a good story.
Yeah, except for people, there were some people out there, man. They were actually sending him death threats.
I know.
That's going a little bit too far, but...
Yeah, I mean, come on. Did anyone really think that Peter Parker was never going to come back?
Right.
I don't think anybody did. I mean, well, you know what? I'm the asshole who liked the Clone Saga back in the day. I think I'm one of the only people that liked that.
Nope. I liked it too. I did.
It was a great read. It kept me running to the comic store every week to get the next issue because it crossed over every Spider-Man title. I ran every week. I could not wait to see what happens next. I loved it. I loved the Scarlet Spider. I really liked the way they went along with everything. So I went into Superior pissed. Within three issues, I was hooked. I loved it all the way through, and I felt the ending was rushed, fast, let down too quick. I wanted more. They could have dragged out the change over two issues. It could have been...
It happened in like one or two panels.
Yeah,
like,
it was terrible.
That's it?
Yeah, it was absolutely anticlimactic for me.
Me too.
I was very indifferent about the last 20, well, I guess from 25 down to current comic, The Amazing Spider-Man 1. I've been kind of indifferent about it because, like, I felt like he was taking far too long to point out that, you know, he was hiding himself from everybody. Which there were so many simple ways that they could have figured it out in the Marvel Universe, like telepaths and et cetera.
Right.
But they, you know, they kept him isolated away from that the entire time, and they Slott drug out the whole story arc way too long, and then it was kind of like, you know, it's almost like he blew his load, you know?
There were a lot of issues throughout there that I felt were complete filler.
Yeah.
And that, to me, it almost felt like somebody higher up said, that's it, enough of this story arc, pull the plug, bring Peter Parker back, we're tired of the sales, and okay, fine. And they did it in like an episode, like you said, two panels.
And look at the timing of it. It happened a week before the movie came out. Wow, look at that.
Exactly.
Well, they probably gave him 1 year to do all this, and he was dragging his feet on it. And almost, I don't know if you guys have ever read any of his Twitters, tweets,
oh, yeah,
or whatever.
I follow
I try to follow him, but he seems like such a bitter little man, you know. I don't know. He steals a lot from Doctor Who, I've noticed, and I didn't realize that until I started watching Doctor Who. And I'm not going to try to discredit him too much because I was very, very happy with the first 15 to 20 issues of Superior, and even still, probably the first or the last 10 issues of The Amazing Spider-Man were awesome. But I don't know, just something about him, it's almost like he's a little, like he ended it almost like because he didn't want to end it. And he's
I kind of felt that myself. Yeah. And I, you know what, I'd be okay if that storyline would have continued on for another year. I think it had a lot of place where it could have gone. I really like all of the damage now that Peter Parker's going to have to go back and, and figure out a way to fix. It does open up a whole new set of storylines.
Right. That's true. I do like that aspect of it. And also, I don't know if you – did you guys pick up any of the variant covers?
No, I did see one at the store today, though.
Well, I picked up the last issue of Superior Spider-Man 31. It's a variant. And a variant of the Amazing Spider-Man 1. And you combine them together, and it makes one big
I did
picture.
See that. I unfortunately, I buy all my comics digitally now.
Yeah.
And I know after the whole thing with, you know, music and everything. But to me, just to be able to have like such a collection on my iPad, and I get on an airplane or I'm on a bus on tour. I love the idea of having all of that at my fingertips, and all my money goes into toys. So
that's what my iPad is. My iPad is a $500 comic book reader.
You got it.
It's the best thing ever
for
that.
Yes, it is. It really is. Love it. You know, and I bought an iPad mini, and I'm like, no, comic books are going to be better on the larger one.
My wife has a mini. Yeah.
My wife
has a mini, and she watches, you know, reads comics on there, too.
Yep, I love it.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't really go very far, so I guess it would make more sense for me to have physical ones.
I have boxes and boxes and boxes of comics.
I do, too.
I have collected Spider-Man paraphernalia and toys since I was 3 years old. I'm 42 now. I literally have a storage locker that is filled with nothing but boxes and boxes and boxes of Spider-Man stuff. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
So do you like Spider-Man?
A little bit.
Well, apparently
all the way down to the tattoo on my back.
That's right. Really?
Yeah.
I can't think of anything. I have a zombie Deadpool tattoo. So
now that's cool. Well, you know what? My only beef with that is you got a Rob Liefeld creation tattooed on your
body. I got the Sudan version of it, so.
What the fuck?
That's true. I can't deny that.
But I do like the character. I would never admit that to Rob, but I do like the character. I hate that guy.
I was actually just showing my wife. Youngblood, because I used to read Youngblood when I was a kid, and I lost all my comics at some point in my life, and I just found all these like 50-cent comics at a flea market, so I picked them up.
I was gonna say, dude, you want it? I got a mint number one. I'll send you.
Well, I was reading over
with crap on it,
you know, and I was showing her these pictures. I was like, look at how much detail this guy put in the face and then the arms. This guy looks massive, and then you get down to his legs, and they're just kind of like. He has no feet.
If you sucked at your job as bad as he sucks at drawing, you'd have been fired. I don't understand how that man works. I honestly truly don't. He's got to be the worst artist in comic book history. And this clown keeps working. Him and I have battles on Twitter all the time. I don't know if you ever noticed.
Did you see the exchange?
I would like to read some of those.
Did you see the exchange between he and Scott Snyder?
No, I didn't.
Holy shit. I think that if you Google it, you'll be able to find somebody had taken screenshots of it. but basically, Scott Snyder was making it very clear that the reason that he's on Batman, you know, and because Rob Liefeld got fired is because obviously Scott Snyder's better, you know. And Liefeld ripped into him with saying, that's bullshit. You know, Hawkman only sold like 14,000 issues, but Batman's automatically going to sell 80,000. You know, they were going back and forth. It was hilarious.
I send him, like, links from Amazon, like, little kid books, how to draw superheroes and shit.
Wow.
I'm brutal on him. I'm brutal on him on Twitter, and he responds to me, which is even funnier.
Does he get butthurt?
No, he doesn't, actually. He does take it really lightly, and he always says, oh, I love this guy, and we go back and forth, and he got me. A couple weeks ago, he got me. I had said something about Deadpool and, you know, how awful his drawings were. So I forget exactly what it was, and he responded with, I said, how do you even get work? And he goes, well, I create characters and sit back and collect a paycheck for the rest of my life.
Zing, he definitely got you.
I said, you know what, I'm starting to like you. What's going on?
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Before we go back into Spider-Man, you're an old school Marvel nerd like me.
Oh yeah, I like Batman. I like everything, but yeah, my heart belongs to Spider-Man and Marvel. It always has.
What's your favorite Marvel series that people might not ever really paid attention to?
Oh, good question. Man, that's tough to say because, like I said, I know as hated as the Clone Saga was, I tell people I like that and instantly, you know, I get a look like they just, like, smelled shit. You know, it's but I really enjoyed it. I mean, I can find entertainment in just about anything. I'm such a Spider-Man fan. I like the controversy behind it. I like issues that make you pissed because it just adds excitement to it for me. And, you know, I was a big, I liked arcs that Tom Lyle did back in the day. And I liked, it's so hard. It's like one of those things. I've been a fan for so long of my life. I like so much. It's very difficult for me to pick one specific arc. I loved what Todd McFarlane did with the character. His run on Spider-Man to me is still one of the best.
I love the way he drew Spider-Man.
Oh, God. The eyes, the webs.
Yeah, so sinister. I loved it. Now, okay, were you aware that they're going to be releasing Spider-Man 2099 in July?
Oh,
yeah.
No, wait.
Did you hear who's going to be writing it?
No.
Peter David.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah. So that's a pretty damn big, big deal.
Wait a minute. David did the original run, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Amazing.
Actually, no. Yeah,
I thought he was ill and he was retiring from comics for a while, but apparently not.
No, he's actually writing X Factor right now too.
Right, I know. Because I mean, all right.
Yeah, I always thought that was another brilliant character, and I loved that run too. That was a great comic run. I actually have physical all of those, the entire run.
Yeah,
I do too. Spider-Man 2099 is still stuck in the current Spider-Man timeline, though, right?
Yeah, yes,
now he is.
What's he, Michael O'Mara now? Something like that?
Miguel. Oh, yeah, yeah, he changed his name. Right.
Michael O'Mara,
something like that, yeah.
Okay.
If you look in your Amazing Spider-Man comic, number one, there's actually a story called Homecoming, sort of, written by Peter David as well.
You know, great. I read it this morning, and I have it in front of me right now, and I did not see that it was written by Peter David. Oh, let me ask you this. You guys both read Amazing One, right?
Yes.
Now, here I am. I'm going to take over. I'm going to start asking the questions.
Go for it.
You know,
your show now, man.
The teaser on the first page, they're introducing the character Silk.
Yes.
The girl that gets bit by the same spider. How do you guys feel about that?
I don't like it.
Ah.
But it is what it is, and I have to deal with it. I just think I think that the whole thing is weird.
I think it's another cash grab. I think it's
they always are looking for the next thing they can do. You know, Marvel is always doing the events and all that kind of stuff. So I did sort of like how even the artwork and the style of it was completely different. Like it was back from the original, like 60s version.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I did like that portion of it, but you know, a female Spider-Man now. Come on.
We'll see. Maybe she'll have different powers. I have no idea. But yeah, right off the bat, I'm going into it negatively, kind of like I did Superior Spider-Man. So we'll see.
Let me see. I'm going to send it to both of you in the chat here so you can look at it.
So you did say you liked all Spider-Man stories. Okay, so I guess how many years ago when they, what's it called, One More Day, when they retconned everything and changed everything up?
There was a time where I kind of got out of the comics a little bit, like Civil War, and I went back and reread them, and, you know, my problem with Marvel is they never stick to it. They do something, and then they backtrack every time, and I understand why they have to do that. It's kind of a reboot and things like that, but, I mean, yeah, just a lot of things in more modern time comics have pissed me off than excited me, and the constant backtracking, I don't know. Even though the Superior, I you knew that was going to happen, and I was okay with the storyline because I think they made an incredibly dark and sinister Spider-Man, which I loved back in the 90s. There was like a two-year span where, I don't know if you remember, it was after he would come home and crouch on his kitchen table and just pull the mask up to his nose and eat like an animal and go back out, and he was just the spider. It was just this, people hated that arc. I thought it was cool as shit. You know, so I'm okay with a shakeup, and I'm okay with things kind of reverting back, but when they become so big, like he pulls his mask off and reveals to the world who he is, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then, well, we got a fix for that. It's like, okay, you know.
And what was it? You were Mary Jane, the marriage to Mary Jane never happened.
Right.
No, come on.
Yeah, that was part of the deal, wasn't it? That if it was able to revert, then I can't even remember why, but they said, see, there's things that piss me off. Even now with The Amazing, Peter Parker belongs with Mary Jane.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it kind of needs to happen. Hopefully it does again at some point.
You can tell they still are in love. They're just going to drag it out forever.
Yeah, well, until Mary Jane is involved in Amazing Spider-Man 3, and a week before that is when they'll get together again in the comics.
You called her right there.
Yeah.
You going to say something, JM?
I am. I'm reading over this article that's talking about Silk. And it says, apparently, Slott is creating the new character and will wave her way into the upcoming Spider-Verse event.
Yeah, Spider-Verse. I'm still unsure of how that's going to go, them bringing in every incarnation of Spider-Man ever in one event. That's going to be interesting.
Over the last 52 years, they're going to be doing this.
Why don't they just call her Spider-Woman? Oh, wait, they can't do that. Or Spider-Girl? Nope.
Well,
that's been taken, too.
From what I remember, and my, you know how I like to read about my little facts here, from what I recall, Venom was actually supposed to be a woman originally.
Yeah, I did hear that, too.
And from this image that I'm looking at, I don't know. I sent it in the chat to Carrie. I don't know if you can get to it, Paul. But it actually has an image of Silk with looks like a beaten down Spider-Man inside these webs. She's standing over him all. She's dark as hell.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah, I do see it. She's pretty cool looking.
Yeah, she is.
I can't get into the chat, but I'm going to Google that shit right now and see if I can find it.
It's on NewYorkDailyNews.com, if that helps.
Okay.
Or if Carrie can send it your way.
I just sent it to you on old Facey Space, so hopefully that will come to you. So, besides a Spider-Man fan, what else do you read now?
I was checking out the new Fantastic Four reboot, obviously. The Avengers. You know, I read a lot of the Marvel stuff. We've been so busy with this damn album. I am very far behind, like 8-9 months on comics, other than Spider-Man. It's the only one. Oh, Walking Dead, I read that pretty religiously.
Okay, great. Me too.
But yeah, it's I've just been so damn busy. I feel bad. I've put a lot of my geek stuff to the side like that, and I need to catch up on a lot of issues.
It's funny how that works, too, because time is definitely not it's not very ample.
I don't mind catching up. You know, I like having a good 15-20 issues I need to sit down and catch up on, and I like doing it that way. I like watching TV shows the same way.
That's actually one of the reasons I didn't buy Batman Eternal was because when I was at the comic book store yesterday, I saw that they're already on issue 4, so it's not very much longer before they put out a first volume. So that's kind of the same thing, I guess.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, I'm looking at that picture now. That is pretty cool. We'll see, man. I have my doubts, but this might turn out to be something pretty neat. We will see.
Well, knowing Dan Slott, somehow or another, it would be some kind of ex-girlfriend of his that dumped him back in seventh grade.
Yeah, that's good.
It's the woman that got away. He's always been in love with her.
Oh.
Little angry troll.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the Amazing Spider-Man number one before we go on to talk about the movie,
right?
Which is Amazing Spider-Man number two. You know, so like you said before, that you know the things that you know Doc Ock set up for you know during his I guess tenure as Spider-Man, if you will.
Yeah.
Like the company and like the girlfriend and all this kind of stuff. There's a lot of changes going to be happening to him. And then with Jameson, like, basically just quitting.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like he's welcome back at the Bugle either, so that's going to be interesting.
No.
Yeah.
With Doc Ock on, you got to have a new villain. You know, so possibly I could see him becoming some sort of a bitter money horse.
Well, Doc Ock, he'll be back because wasn't his mind also backed up and saved into that robotic? What the hell was that?
That butler deal.
There was something where he'll be back. It's Marvel. He'll be back.
Exactly. Nobody ever truly dies in the Marvel universe.
No.
But yeah, you're right. I didn't pay attention to that. The Daily Bugle actually did a smear on him on the cover, and he was not happy with that.
No, not at all. So I don't know what his role is going to play in any of this now.
It's interesting. I mean, I'm looking forward to reading more of this stuff. And hopefully they'll bring the Peter Parker version back into some more of the like Avengers and those type of things too.
I hope so. It looks, and that was another thing that kind of pissed me off in the last Superior was when he quit the Avengers and all of a sudden, oh, I thought you quit. Well, no, I'm okay. I'm all back. It's like, wait a minute, really? It's just going to work like that?
I know, right?
I take that back. Right? No take backs. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was a little weird and a little rushed and a little, you know, one panel. I'm back in the Avengers. Oh, okay.
Nothing happened.
You can't quit your job on Friday, think about it over the weekend, and go back into Monday. You know what? I don't really want to quit.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm good. So, I mean, what is your opinion on where the storyline is going now that Peter Parker's back in control?
I think they better come up with something really interesting, and I think that you're going to get at least a year or two of him repairing damage, trying to deal with this company, figure out what's there, dealing with Aunt May's new husband, dealing with what's her name? Anna Maria? Anna Marie, the girlfriend that was Doc Ock's?
The way that Humberto Ramos draws her in this issue, she looks like she's like 12.
It's a very... I thought the whole thing was creepy and strange. And
yeah, it's like he's dating a little girl.
Yeah, and it wasn't because she's drawn to be like a little person. And, you know, I have no issue with that whatsoever. I think kind of cool, actually. I've never really seen anybody like attempt something like that before. But now I feel bad for it. It kind of sucks. How is this going to pan out without like this character getting crushed or just swept under the carpet? I don't know. It's some of the stuff I don't think was thought through very well.
And she knows at the very end of the issue that Peter Parker is, or
yeah,
the guy that she was dating.
That was creepy too, because of moles under his belly button.
Yeah.
What the fuck? yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Again, so, it's one of these things that this can go really well or horribly wrong in a matter of a frame or two.
How long has Dan Slott been writing? Because, I mean, for a while they had, like, you know, four or five different writers they would, you know, rotate through.
I think he took over, what, a couple years ago? It hasn't been that long.
Do you think they should go back to that style where, you know, they would do story arcs written by different writers.
Hmm.
You think that would help out?
I've always been a fan of a storyline, and like I said, it goes back to the Clone Saga. I really like the story continuing from book to book to book to book, so you don't have a month wait.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say, because I don't know how big the scope is yet. None of us do. We don't really know where he's taking this. I'm hoping he's got a couple-year plan lined up on the storyline. You know, and I hope it's going to be exciting and keep my interest like Superior did.
I just looked at the numbers here. He's had 77 appearances in The Amazing Spider-Man.
Wow.
25, well, obviously now 31 in Superior Spider-Man. And he used to write The Astonishing Spider-Man as well. So
that's right.
That's 25. It's 133 plus the new Amazing Spider-Man. So it's 131.
He was a writer, but he only like kind of took over,
right?
In the last couple of years, he took that from Bendis, didn't he? Or not Bendis. Was it Bendis?
Let's see.
I forget who the runner was, who the head guy was at the time he took over.
I can't remember his name now. I'm looking, trying to see here.
I'm such terrible we are. Names.
No, let's see.
So while he's looking that up, what is your opinion on Bendis as the writer?
Mark Waid.
I thought the Bendis he had the Ultimate run, correct?
Bendis did have the Ultimate run, yeah.
Ultimate Spider-Man was one of the greatest modern day comics, in my opinion, that's come out.
Could not agree more.
Storyline was brilliant. Artwork was brilliant all
Everything
the way up,
it.
And they killed him much too quickly. Another story, I was really pissed, and I've learned to like the new Miles Morales Spider-Man. I kind of think it's a fresh approach. I don't hate it, but I miss, you know, I miss the Ultimate run. I really miss, that's one where I wish Marvel would now backtrack and bring Peter Parker back.
You know what it was? It was fun. It was fun to read, and that's missing from a lot of comics.
I attributed the Ultimate Spider-Man run to the Spectacular Spider-Man TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I thought out of all of the Spider-Man cartoons throughout history, my favorite run was Spectacular Spider-Man.
And Bendis had his hand in that as well.
Exactly. It was fresh. It took all of the ideas and joined the whole Spider-Man universe together that all made sense. Kind of what they're doing with the movies now. I just thought it was brilliantly done and modernized in a tasteful way where fans could really enjoy it. And they did it smart by putting it in its own universe instead of trying to incorporate that into the Amazing line.
And they're able to... Yeah, exactly. I mean, they weren't... That way they could bring, like... You know, the Samuel Jackson version of Nick Fury into
right.
it, and they brought Coulson into it. And
absolutely,
it's just a fun show. It really is.
I loved it. The new one, I hate it.
What is the new one?
The Ultimate Spider-Man TV show.
It's too campy.
Yeah.
I want to like
childish,
and yet embarrassingly, I watch every episode.
Don't worry, man. I watched it too. And
it's Spider-Man. I have to. I have to watch it. I hate it, but I watch it. I feel so shamed.
It hurts so good.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the movie.
Yes.
Like we said, you've seen it twice already. I've only seen it once. I saw it last night. So, and John Michael, you saw it last night as well?
Yes, I did.
So it's really fresh in our memories. What did everybody think?
I thought it was... the best movie rendition of Spider-Man we've got.
I have to agree, man.
I agree, but I feel the movie was way too slow. They could have cut about half an hour of it out, and it would have flowed a little bit better.
You know what? The first time I saw it, you pay such attention to every detail. It felt like a long movie. The second time I watched it, it went by in a blink. When you can just sit back and enjoy the movie and watch Spider-Man do his thing on screen with a smile from ear to ear without that anticipation on what's going to happen next or what might they screw up. And once you have that kind of removed from the equation and you can sit down and just enjoy it as a Spider-Man movie, it goes by very quick, and it's a whole lot of fun.
What I really like about these movies is they have the right formula for the seriousness of a Spider-Man comic and the campy sarcasticness of the character. They really have it locked down.
Andrew Garfield was the perfect choice. I thought he had nailed the essence of what Spider-Man was supposed to be.
Absolutely. Agree with that, too.
just the wit and the delivery and his body movements, and he made it seem like it was fun to be Spider-Man.
Yeah, he was also the awkward teenager. You know, that's the other thing that it's overlooked a little bit, is he, you know, there was moments where he was kind of like, you know, he knew he was in love, but he didn't know how to say it. He didn't know what to do about it.
Yep.
So it was pretty cool. He didn't know how to stress himself.
You know, there's definitely, did I want to see Rhino in a Rhino costume? Hell yes, I did. Did I want to see Electro with like a yellow lightning bolt mask? Yeah, mm-hmm. I did.
Man, I tell you what, man, when Electro became so powerful to where he was disappearing and going into the electrical streams.
Yes.
That music along with it was so fucking epic.
I tell you, man. They all the music connected to this kind of had that dubstep flair to it.
It did. Which I don't, the wub.
I don't like it, but it fits so well. And I love that the music, the song, kind of was supposed to be the voices in Electro's head.
I love
there
that.
There was a part when he, right when he was in Times Square, and he was starting to go a little crazy.
Yes.
The voices.
Oh.
It reminded me, it was so brutal and so evil. I was like, wow, that'd be a great Death Metal song right there.
Oh, yeah, you just hear the voices, they lied to me. It's like, yeah. Oh, okay, this is badass. And it kept building and getting stronger. Yeah, I loved it. I just, this movie, not only is it the most poorly reviewed Spider-Man movie, it is a love or hate. I know people that are disgusted by this. I don't know anyone down the middle. And I mean, I called a good friend of mine today, one of my nerd friends, and we had a long discussion on it. And I'm like, he's like, yeah, it was nothing special. And I'm like, I thought it was the best Spider-Man movie yet for so many reasons.
Right.
Better than Spider-Man 3? I couldn't even get that out all the way.
Oh, wow. You know, Spider-Man 3 was – it had moments. It had horrible moments, but it did have some. It had some redeeming moments.
Emo Peter Parker, no.
No.
Just no.
I love the character so much that just to see Spider-Man on the big screen, I get a smile from ear to ear. Even if it's shit, it's still Spider-Man, and I'm happy. But
I think in this movie they did the three villain thing perfectly.
Oh,
I was so worried about that. But I really love – this is where we're going to start getting a little spoilery for everybody. But I really do love the bookend, the Rhino, basically.
It was
basically
the perfect amount for a goofy-ass character. And Paul
was done
Giamatti
really well.
Nailed it. Paul Giamatti was awesome in the character. And, yes, did I want more of that fight at the end? Oh, fuck yeah, I did. I wanted to see that shit go all out. But what a great setup for the Sinister Six.
Yeah, I cannot agree more. I do not really like the Rhino costume or mechanical, whatever it is, but it sort of makes sense that everybody else's costume was completely made by Oscorp and mechanical, you know?
I am still under the hopes that there's still time. Sinister Six movie, they can still do more genetic things with Oscorp. Mm-hmm. He still could be the Rhino at some point. I'm still waiting for it.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't lost hope yet.
Because they are doing the Sinister Six movie.
Yeah, they are. That and a Venom movie.
Which I kept on looking for some kind of, like, hint for some kind of, you know.
They were all over the place, man. They were all
for
over
Venom?
The place. Yes. What
did
they call the stuff that was down in the basement that Harry needed? They call it Venom.
Well,
spider Venom, but that's what it is, too. Because, I mean, even when he pulled up the thing on the table, you can see Venom containment. But,
right.
I mean, yeah, we'll see. I mean, they're definitely pushing towards it. That origin is going to be interesting. I don't know if you guys saw the hints at the end of the movie. If you used Shazam during the credits,
I did.
You get the
pictures. I actually still have that on my phone, yeah.
So, I mean, it's obvious it's Vulture, it's Dr. Octopus, it is Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah. Sandman.
Sandman? No, not Sandman. Was it?
I believe so, because, well, from what I've been reading online, because I didn't get to use Shazam because I don't have it on my phone, but from what I've been reading online, there was a hint at multiple characters, but as far as it comes to the Sinister Six, yeah, it's supposed to be the Sandman. It's supposed to be Sandman, Kraven Hunter, no?
Vulture?
Yeah.
Rhino? Okay, so yeah, it was Dr. Octopus, Vulture.
And if you noticed that the Green Goblin's cell said number 7, did you pick up on that when he went to go get his suit on?
I missed that. Which is interesting to me, too, because Goblin always hated the Sinister Six.
Yeah.
Right. Now, you mentioned the Shazam thing before. If you haven't seen the movie yet and you're going to, during the end credits, hold up your Shazam app to the screen and you will get you'll get the bonus, like some bonus pictures. You will get the end credits that without all the names and everything, so you can see what's going on before. Because apparently it's all designs of what the Sinister Six costumes are going to be.
Yeah, it's you definitely, you know, I would think that the Lizard would be part of this, seeing they already have him locked up and he was already in the first movie, but I didn't really get a hint of the Lizard at the end.
No.
So, you know, I don't know. Is it going to be Goblin, Rhino, Electro, Vulture? The face, that could have been Chameleon, that could have been Mysterio.
Mysterio would be awesome.
Oh, I would love that.
See, I'm trying to find pictures and see if there's anything online with that.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
The six pictures.
My main complaint.
Okay,
here
it is. I found it, actually.
As Villain complained about the movie, I saw the guy, what is the name, Dean DeHaan or something?
Yes.
In my opinion, he overacted the hell out of that character. And I don't know if it was a purposeful thing, but it sort of got on my nerves. And I didn't really like the Goblin that much. And especially after he got caught and he sort of turned back to regular.
Yeah.
What was up with that?
Well, the suit that he put on started self-healing.
Okay.
There was, even when he looked at it on his wrist, Felicia, obviously, Felicia Hardy,
mm-hmm.
When they had the discussion, so he knew that by putting on that particular suit that it was designed to start to self-heal. So I think that's what suppressed it for the time being.
So do you think in maybe the next movie will, because they have not introduced Mary Jane, do you think Felicia Hardy might be the love interest? I would love to see that play out in the movies.
I would too. I don't think so. I think she's going to be more of a villain.
Hmm. Okay.
That's kind of my feeling. I think that she will work closely with Osborn, only because it kind of seemed like that's the way they were already pushing this and moving towards. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's
interesting.
I have no idea. They have so many possibilities of things that they can do with this and where they can go. And I have all the confidence in them in the world after seeing this movie, because I thought, you know, I know a lot of people, it's too many villains. And, you know, I hear your complaints on the Goblin, but I actually did enjoy it. I hated the Green Goblin in the first Spider-Man movie.
Mm-hmm. Stupid.
You hire an actor who already looks like the Green Goblin and can make faces like the Green Goblin, and then you put him in a helmet?
Right.
You know. So, yeah.
Well, Dennis Leary got the easiest paycheck of his career in this movie, though.
I would agree.
All he had to do was show up and look at the camera a few times.
You know, they obviously set up that ending from the very beginning in a very, very big way.
Oh, man.
Okay, here's where we're going to get spoilerific, because I avoided any kind of spoilers about the movie before I saw it. I didn't want to know anything about the plot besides what they showed in, like, the trailers and stuff. I did not think they were going there with the Gwen Stacy storyline until I saw her in the outfit. I was like, oh shit, they're going to go there.
Yeah. I knew it. I mean, as fans, we all knew it was coming. I didn't know if it was coming in this movie, or I thought it would be the next one when the Goblin was the main villain.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I got to tell you, that scene just fucking crushed me.
Me too, man.
Holy shit. I mean, I don't think I've ever got, like, teary-eyed in a fucking superhero movie, and this did it, man. I was, like, really broken by that. You can hear a pin drop in that theater.
Right.
It took the breath out of everybody in there. It was amazing.
Did you, did you get to see it in 3D, or did you see it 2D?
Only 2D. I don't want to see 3D. I hate 3D movies unless it's animation.
Yeah. I don't like
the or if it's shot in 3D
or if it's in Disney, but the whole, I don't know if you noticed or not, but the web kind of turned into a hand.
I was going to mention that myself.
Yeah, and as soon as I realized it was a hand, that's when I heard it latch onto her, and all I heard was a silence. And that was probably the most empty sound I've heard, and it was like, oh my god, I knew it was coming, but it went right through me. It rocked me, man.
It was brutal, and it was exactly how I wanted it to be. I wish they would have taken the dialogue more directly from the original comic because it's so powerful, but damn, was that unbelievable.
And even afterwards with him hanging out the stone, it was brutal.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Brilliantly done. And that's where Mark Webb, I think, shines as a director, because he knows how to get that emotional grab from something like this. That's why I know my buddy complained, it was too much of a love story. No, I thought it was – I believed that they loved each other.
Did you ever watch 500 Days of Summer, the movie he did before?
I did not see that.
It's a heart-wrenching movie, and it's directed in a way where you feel for the characters, and that's what he's able to bring into a huge summer action blockbuster movie is to be able to feel for these characters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You felt the loss that he was going through.
No, and I'm a big fucking pussy anyway. I cry at shit all the time. So I mean, it's, you know, yeah, I got emotional. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Now, what did you guys think about the after credit scene?
Bullshit.
Yeah, it was. It was weird.
Why it was there?
Oh yeah, I do. I read all about it. It was a contract thing to allow him to direct, and it had nothing to do with Spider-Man whatsoever. All it's going to do is confuse people. Yeah, I was. Mm-hmm. I was kind of pissed.
Is Spider-Man going to be in the X-Men movie or vice versa? No.
No,
it's not
at all. Not
like that at all.
It was a commercial. It wasn't a stinger. It was a commercial.
Yeah, exactly.
It's damage control for Bryan Singer touching babies.
not going there,
I'm sorry,
but probably.
Sorry.
Not babies, little boys.
Well, close enough. Well, did you guys, I don't know if we actually mentioned this or not, but did you notice that Smythe was in the movie?
Yep, absolutely,
yes.
Which I thought
BJ
was great.
Novak. I had to explain to my wife afterwards. I'm like, oh wow, it was Alistair Smythe, and she's like, who?
Yeah.
I was like, well, the Spider Slayers. So you know they're not going to put somebody in the movie that, you know, short amount of time and not do something with them in the next movie.
The BJ Novak. I leaned over to my girlfriend Nikki and in the theater. I'm like, what the hell is he from? I for the life of me, I cannot place it.
He's from The Office.
Thank you.
That's where I fucking saw him.
Of course.
did you see Inglourious Basterds?
No.
Yes, I did. The Bear Jew.
The Bear Jew.
The Bear Jew. He was.
He was like the right hand man guy.
Right. No, the Bear Jew was Eli Roth.
Eli Roth. There you go. And if you've seen what was that movie? But
hold on one second. He's from The Office, and he was in Inglourious Basterds.
And he was also in the recent movie about Mary Poppins, Saving Mr. Banks.
Oh, that I have not seen.
Yeah. But BJ Novak, I mean, he's like he was like one of the producers of The Office and one of the writers too, so he's just not just an actor, which is cool.
Very nice. Yeah,
they're definitely setting him up to be a villain, and hopefully they go there, because that would be really cool.
Well, the other thing that we know now for sure is that the man who appeared in Kurt Connors' jail cell at the end at Ravencroft is Fierce, who is the gentleman
yep.
who puts together the Sinister Six. So now that mystery's been solved.
Hmm. That's true. I probably should have seen the first movie right before we saw this one.
I did that two days ago. We did
it. I should have just refreshed my memory a little bit, you know?
I was actually going to buy it at Target because right now it's $8 on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Wow.
Definitely, dude. If you don't have it already. Wow.
Yeah, very nice.
So we all give the movie 2 thumbs up?
I loved it. I really did. I know a lot of people don't, but I will stand by it. I think it is the best Spider-Man movie that's been put out so far. It got the character of Spider-Man completely right for the first time.
It's so hard, you know. We all become jaded when it comes to things like movies and in especially stuff that we grew up watching. But if you just go and just enjoy it for what it is, you will have a great time.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, did you guys watch Saturday Night Live last night?
No,
I didn't. I'm going to end up having to download it because I didn't see it.
Yeah, I'm sure you can go to, you know, like the YouTube or the Hulu website. They show all the Saturday Night Live stuff, but they did a skit where it was Emma Stone. It was the scene from the movie where they were up on the bridge and he just, you know, did the I love you in webs.
Yeah.
They trying to recreate that, and the director came on, and every time he'd say, okay, go. They had the most awkward kisses, and they couldn't. It's pretty damn funny, and they're totally in character, and there was like really bad acting in it. It's pretty funny.
Nice. Yeah, I definitely want to check that out.
It's great timing that they can do a skit on a movie that just came out that weekend, you know?
Yeah.
The lead actor is on your show, so. Not bad timing.
No, not at all.
Cool. So, are there any other, you know, like movies you guys are looking forward to this summer?
Well, pretty much everything Marvel's got coming out. You got X-Men in a couple weeks. You got Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to Guardians of the Galaxy.
I don't know if you guys are going to watch it or not, but I actually watched Son of Batman today.
Oh,
phenomenal animated movie.
I've just read about that.
It was brutal, bloody, and followed the storyline of Damian Wayne very, very closely. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a sequel to this, but if you enjoyed the run of Damian Wayne being introduced into Bruce Wayne's life, I highly recommend watching the movie.
I heard it's very brutal and very, you know, graphic.
Yeah, I actually didn't expect Deathstroke to be in the movie.
Oh, spoiler, come on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I had a buddy of mine who worked for me for Comic Palooza. We were watching a movie. He leaned over to me when we saw the Godzilla trailer. He's like, I was in Hawaii last year, and he like wound up on the set for Godzilla with his camera, and they thought he was a production assistant, so they gave him a check at the end of the day.
Nah.
So he said he has this footage of behind-the-scenes stuff, and I was like, man, I've got to see that.
Nice.
That's too funny.
I was like, I asked him, was the Godzilla really there? He's like, no. It's like, way to ruin the fucking fantasy, man. But yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm super excited. Have you been reading the comic, JM?
Yes, actually, I have been.
That's the last thing I wanted to talk about, because I just read the last one, which I guess is issue 14, where Venom is on the team now.
Yeah.
And it made sense to me why, I'm like, why would Venom be in Guardians of the Galaxy, but they walk into that bar, and the bartender says, we don't serve, you know, your kind around here. And he was talking to Venom. He was talking to the symbiote.
Interesting. Right.
And it is an alien symbiote. So I think we're going to start learning more about where it actually comes from in some little backstory about that, finally.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And if you were actually at Free Comic Book Day and you picked up the Guardians of the Galaxy comic book that they had for free...
I have it in my hand right now.
It actually tells you the story of why or how they are introduced to Flash Thompson and Venom. So it's pretty cool.
Okay, cool, because I haven't read it yet, but I have it in my hand.
Well, sorry, didn't mean to spoil it if I did.
Nope, no spoilers.
By the way, this Wednesday, a brand new comic is coming out. I don't know if you read DC at all, Paul, but I do. And what's it? Future's End is coming out, and I read the Zero issue today. I got it from Free Comic Book Day, and it is fucking cool. It's basically this – pretty much what's happening is there's a technology that's taking over all the heroes and killing them off. So Terry McGinnis has to come back from the future to try to stop the technology from being invented. So nice. Very Age of Ultron-ish, but it's very cool.
I was going to say, it's very Day of the Future Past.
Yeah. I mean, well, what's really interesting about it is, like, he actually has, like, Alfred. It's a computerized program of Alfred inside of his mask where he can communicate constantly with it.
That doesn't sound familiar at all.
No, not Iron Man at all.
And,
exactly.
And he's not supposed to be, he's not allowed to meet himself, or, I'm sorry, Batman. Because Batman will try to kill him because he's on a mission to go kill he's on a mission to go kill two people, and if he doesn't kill them, then obviously the virus is going to happen. But one of the main characters in the whole story arc is Grifter, which is very interesting to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys read Stormwatch back when Image Comics was first introduced, but Stormwatch is a team, and the team's now, you know, in the story arc, too.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they're bringing in a lot of really interesting characters, and I would read it. My comic book store just opened up, a local one just opened up here, and yesterday when I went there, they gave a coupon to where, like, if you show up and you bring that coupon back into the shop on Wednesday, they'll give you the comic for $1. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to reading it. And if you haven't read The Flash Annual number 3, check it out. It's pretty brutal.
Can I say a bad joke now?
Yeah, please.
Did you read it fast?
I did.
Was it a fast read?
Yes, it was. It was actually, it's very interesting. Barry Allen is now a CSI cop. And the story arc deals with Grodd apparently killed the Reverse Flash by eating him and absorbing his power.
So he's a CSI cop now. Does it have really bad cinematography and oversaturation of the color?
Yeah, and whenever whenever Barry Allen says something like, "I'm gonna get this guy," he puts on his mask really awkwardly, and they zoom in
uncomfortably.
Yeah. But there's a new Flash costume, and it's actually Flash from the future, and he's got to come back and kill himself. So, very interesting.
Yeah, that's cool.
Cool. I think we've given enough love to Spidey for the week.
Never.
never. Dude, thank you so much for being on the show. You're welcome to come back anytime. I need to get you and Larry both on the show so y'all can geek out together.
Oh, I would love to do that. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
So let's let everybody give their spiel on where they can be found on all the interwebs. First of all, we forgot to mention some of our sponsors, JM.
I was thinking the same thing as you were exiting this. Well, I don't know. We should probably just do a commercial at some point and just
Our voices, man.
Yeah. But this episode of Metal Geeks Podcast is brought to you by thevinyldead.com. See?
What is thevinyldead.com?
Where you can buy all of your geeky needs, such as Funko Pops, action figures, and various other stuff that people will make fun of you over. But it's okay, because when they do make fun of you, you can say, look, I got a code, MetalGeeks10, and I save 10% off of my order.
That's right. You can make fun of me, but I still save some fucking money.
That's
right.
Awesome.
So, yeah, go to thevinyldead.com. And, again, I am proud to say that we are one of the... I guess I can say proud a couple times here. We are a proud sponsor of Comic Palooza. So go to comicpalooza.com. Look up the guest list, because we have an amazing list of like over 150 guests this year, ranging from like Jim Steranko to like 5 people from the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., 4 doctors from Doctor Who. That's pretty
And don't
massive.
Forget the WWE professional wrestlers that, well, they used to be wrestlers. They're going to be there, Kevin Nash and Bret Hart.
And Booker T will be there wrestling, who I actually met Booker T in an event the other day. He was a nice guy.
Very cool.
speaking of which, I wanted to drop a name real quick. Ian Robinson's Knife Edge Chop, you can find it on YouTube. Episode 2 has now been posted. Go watch it.
He's definitely one of our writers, and that's something coming up. We are wrapping up our redesign of the website, so that should be coming up before Comic Palooza. And I spoke to Geekazoid today, and we will have a lot of brand new merchandise coming out very, very soon. And maybe a new sponsor.
Just made my nipples hard.
Really, mine too.
Yeah.
So, and so you can find us everywhere, I guess, Instagram, Twitter, all Metal Geeks Podcast, Metal Geeks on Twitter, Metal Geeks Podcast on Facebook, iTunes. Go find us on iTunes, subscribe. Like the show, give us some feedback, send us an email, metalgeekspodcast@gmail.com. Okay, I'm done.
Me too.
All right, and Paul, let everybody know where they can find out all about you personally, and then as well as the band.
You can look me up on Facebook, Paul Kerr, K-U-H-R. Twitter is at Paul Kerr. The band is novembersdoom.com. Just do a Google search for us. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook and all those fun places as well. Pre-order Blood White from thenrecords.com. And hopefully
check out their YouTube page. Check out their YouTube page and watch the video from with behind-the-scenes footage of the making of the album.
Yeah, you know, I want to jump in here real quick because anybody who's going to pre-order the album, do it, like he said, on theomegaorder.com. There's two different bundles that they can do. You can get a white 2LP t-shirt and patch bundle for $29.99. And you can also get a CD, t-shirt, and a patch bundle for $19.99.
You can't even buy a t-shirt regularly for $20.
No,
you get the CD and a patch.
I mean,
it's a really good deal.
Yeah, half the time CDs in the shop are almost $15.99, so why wouldn't you want to pay that much more money and you get a patch and a fucking awesome shirt?
Indeed.
Agreed.
I knew you would agree to that one.
Yeah, there's 71 days left to reserve the pre-order now. The album was released on July 15th. I don't know why it says 2015.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah.
So between now and then,
2015.
You know, we'll be releasing some video and, you know, early tracks and
I was
all
reading
kinds
that.
Of stuff
I was like,
is in the way.
That doesn't make any sense. But yeah, it's actually that one of the bundles is actually valued at $40 and you get fucking $11 off if you pre-order it now. So go and do it.
Thank you, man, for being a guest and geeking out about Spider-Man with us this week. We really appreciate it.
I loved it. Thank you guys for having me on.
And you are definitely welcome back anytime, sir.
Sounds good.
Thanks for coming on, dude.
All right, guys. Thank you.
So,
flip, flip.
I was waiting for somebody to do that. So as we say to all of our guests, thank you for coming on again. And everybody knows what they need to do now.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep it.
You gotta keep it geeky.
Keep it geeky, guys. Thank you, man.
Take care.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out!
Hey, Geekazoids! Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit MSRcast.com. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.